All That Is Canada podcast. This is Steve Kim, your host, and I'm here in the studio with Andy Steiger and Chris Battle, as usual here.
Greetings.
It's good to be here this morning.
Excited.
Yeah, let's jump right into it. Chris, you've been very kind of, shall we say, incensed lately.
I have been incensed. First, actually,
how much does it take to incense Chris Battle?
It depends on the situation. Like if someone eats the last of the ice cream, I would say that's like DEFCON 1.
Yeah, DEFCON 1.
Do you know what I'm saying? So yeah. It's on it. There's an alert, but it's not, yeah. It's not like out of control.
Interestingly enough, for my wife, it's if I leave only just a little bit left.
And that's actually worse because then it's a tease.
Yeah. Right?
You just get like a little taste and it's like, man.
It's almost worse than eating it all.
You know what? I can agree with that. Yeah. No, for instance, this morning, actually this wasn't, I'm looking at Sarah and I'm like, man, time is going by really fast. It seems like Sunday was just yesterday. And I'm like, man, babe.
Sunday was yesterday.
Was it? No.
Oh, wait, no, that would have been 2 days.
And I'm like, babe, we're going to be super old soon. And she's like, yeah, especially you.
Oh. Zing.
Zing. I'm looking at her. I'm like, oh.
Yeah, I got a birthday coming up this weekend. I'm feeling it.
Going to join the ranks.
Steve? I was telling him just the other day that he'll be officially in his late 30s.
Yeah, thanks, Steve.
In just a few days.
He called
me a dirty dog. dare you, he said.
The water's warm, my friend. Jump in.
Yeah, I know. I keep telling everybody I'm turning 27, but they
just won't buy it. Yeah,
they're not picking up what you're putting down.
I may be a decade off there.
Yeah, I could probably still go back to Columbia Bible College and just kind of sort of blend in.
Easily.
No, that's the Asian I never age problem.
Yeah.
And then once there's a tipping point, though. Once we hit that tipping point, we
avalanche.
Yeah, exactly. we catch up pretty quickly in the last... Yeah, a couple decades of our lives, apparently.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's like when you're 100, so you're doing all right.
Still doing okay.
Being incensed.
I just reading on Facebook, I love my brothers and sisters that are wanting to get excited and wanting to be passionate about news, and they see people like Donald Trump saying things that they don't appreciate and doing things.
The Donald.
Doesn't always have the best filter or any filter and says things that are suspect. And, he's been accused, and I think in good reason, being a bully.
It makes you wonder if he does it on purpose, eh?
Mm-hmm.
I think, you were saying something earlier about that, Annie. Why don't you share your theory?
Oh, well, I do think he does it on purpose. It seems that he's got this pattern in which he'll make a controversial statement. He'll let it linger for a little bit, let it brew, and then when it's at its tipping point, then he'll come in and kind of clarify what he said and didn't
temper
say.
Temper it a bit,
kind of smooth it out, ride that free publicity till he can and let it die a bit, and then he comes out with another controversial statement.
Yeah, well, he certainly kind of remains on our radar, so to speak.
Oh, right? He knows what he's
consistently
doing.
Consistently, yeah. The guy's a genius. But
when it comes to, promoting himself.
Yeah, but business or anything. Yeah. Like, he's very savvy.
Yeah, he must be paying someone the big bucks to make sure, he keeps on that publicity track.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't be surprised if that were the case at all.
He's playing the Twitter game. He's got the social media and things. He's got, and he has a lot of support. Like, as of right now, from what I understand, he's leading in the polls to get the presidential nomination for the Republican Party.
It's truly amazing. Mm-hmm. Like I can't, that's one of those things where my mind tries to comprehend it and then I just have to stop because I just can't.
Well, it's like he's the other end of the spectrum from Obama evidently. Mm-hmm. And there's many people that are so maybe sick of him and they want change. You know, it's like that thirst for we want the exact opposite of what we have.
He seems to speak to the human, to human depravity, like those thoughts that you have deep down in there.
Rage fantasies.
Right, that you just don't voice because you know you shouldn't. You know, that's what he does. He voices those things and people love it.
And it itches where people, it scratches where people itch, so to speak.
Yeah, it's like inside out, the political version or something like that. But he's outside in. I don't like. Yeah.
Well, there are a lot of people that are kind of getting sick of the whole, you know, PC culture thing and all
exactly.
That stuff.
So he plays into that perfectly. Yeah. The problem is people have a difficult time really wrestling with what he says and come up with. Like you were like, I'm sure you'd like to talk about.
Yeah, it's just the thinking through what he's talking about. And I'm thinking specifically of his comments on Islam and Muslims. Now, hear me in context. And I am saying that I don't agree that we should just pen away at PEN, like stick them in camps or anything like that. That's not what I'm saying. And to be honest, I don't think that's what he's saying either. But that's another matter. But what gets me is when
he leaves it ambiguous enough to for you to.
Exactly. You can sort of use your imagination, right? But people are equating what he's doing with what Hitler did, right? And I've seen a meme that talks about in America, you know, we talk about the black slave or not slavery, but racism against blacks, the Holocaust,
right?
And then now with Donald Trump in with Muslims. Mm-hmm. And there's a big problem in that, and that's Jewish people are Jewish by race, black people are black by race. Mm-hmm. Islam is an ideology. It's something, it's a religion that people choose to follow. And so what he's saying is, I don't agree with your ideology, either change it or go. And I'm paraphrasing, right? Mm-hmm. But you can't do that change your blackness, change your Jewishness. That doesn't even make sense. Right. But I guess either it's the way he's wording it or, and I think probably more likely, people aren't actually thinking through what he's saying and they're making a wrong equivalent. Mm-hmm. And that is what incenses me, because they're making memes and getting all fired up over something that's not even actually true.
Well, it's interesting, too, when you read the comment that he made, we should probably quote it.
Yeah.
But just paraphrasing it was more or less that they should put a pause to immigration from what he said with Muslims until they figure this whole terrorism thing out. Which, you know, I don't agree with what he's doing.
No.
In what he's saying, of course.
We're not apologists for Donald Trump.
No.
Right? No. but the American people have a really hard time thinking clearly on what's being said and making equivocations that are actually accurate.
Exactly.
One of the other things, though, that where I think they are right, where he does sound very much like Hitler or the Nazi Party, is the way in which he bullies people. I would think would be a better equivalent.
Mm-hmm.
He does try to silence people that are in opposition to him, and that actually concerns me. That's quite frightening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he does have a strong personality. That it's his way or the highway.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of people who are supportive of Donald Trump, they are supportive of him precisely because of that, because they want somebody who will say my way or the highway and get things done, is the way they put it. But
yeah.
I'm thinking, really, I don't know if you want that kind of a person in power over the whole country.
Oh, I can answer that for you. You don't.
Yeah, exactly.
I can remember when he first announced
that's what's
his
so problematic about it is how high he is in the polls, and it's like, this guy's a maniac. You don't want him leading a country.
Do you guys remember when he first announced his desire to seek the nomination? We talked about this and we laughed about it, right? Like we talked about him not being a person that you'd want leading your country, running your business, yes, but not running your country.
Mm-hmm.
But, and even then running your business, I don't know about that either. But if you want to make money, fine. But at any rate, we thought it was laughable. And now it's actually, at least he'll be in the race.
Mm-hmm. So that's a little, disconcerting. We should all be in prayer for our neighbors to the south. That they'll make the right decision, a wise decision, in terms of who they're going to put in the power of leadership.
Exactly. And also just urge people just to think about stuff critically.
I think the way I deal with Facebook and things like that, whenever I see something and I get really angry or really emotional over an issue, I'll always just do a timeout. step away, because if I'm getting emotional, I'm not thinking clearly.
That's wise,
right? Mm-hmm. And I'll be fine with getting emotional after I've thought through an issue, because that for me just is passion. But blind emotion without seeing clearly, that's just.
I think really at the heart of the issue is we're trying to figure out what to do with this terrorism thing that's taking place, and it's more than just Islam. I mean, come on, mass killings that are taking place around the world are not just Islamically motivated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, many we've seen many where people are going and killing people for all sorts of reasons.
Yeah. Nationalism, as in the case of Imperial Japan, or communism.
I'm upset that such and such fired me.
Right.
I mean, it could be that simple.
Just.
Yeah, or I got bullied at school, or
exactly, yeah. And so
revenge
now this
killing.
Is exactly this is revenge. So I mean, well, that's another one of those things that we're really going to need to think clearly on how to deal with this issue, whether it be ISIS or just gun control in general. I mean, these are some really tough questions that we're dealing with.
That's actually another hot button thing on Facebook right now, is the idea of gun control and what to do. And you'll see a lot of memes people are putting up. A picture of a spoon and saying it didn't cause people to get fat, you know, something along the lines of that. Why is a gun, accused of killing a person? Guns don't kill people. People kill people and all that stuff. So
that's a whole another issue that we won't get into at the moment.
No, but leave that one to go.
There is a different issue, though, that we wanted to get into that's been on the news. And I think this is pretty relevant to where we are as a culture. And it deals with pigs.
Yeah, this is right up your alley, Andy. This is your bandwagon with the whole personhood thing.
Yeah, well, it brings up issues about personhood. Mm-hmm. Chris, you want to tell people what the story was?
Sure. There was a woman. I got her name here.
Apparently, she's a pig activist.
Anita Crank, or it's K R A J N C.
Yeah, I just those K-R-A. Names I just don't I give up. So
Anita, it's Anita K.
So it's Anita
K R A J N C.
Krajnik?
Krajnik.
Yeah, I'm not sure. How to...
Yeah, well, let's call her Anita.
Just, Anita. Yeah, sure,
we'll go with that. She's like Madonna. So anyway, Anita is an animal rights activist, and there was a trailer hauling pigs down the road, and they were heading to the slaughterhouse. And while it was stopped, she came in and gave the pigs water. And, you know, at first glance, it's like, oh, whatever, what's the big deal? But when you think about it, if those are going to be transported for food, it's an issue. So because there's no telling what she's giving them, and she could potentially be tainting it. So she was arrested.
It sounds to me, though, from when I was reading the article, that it wasn't the feeding or giving the pigs water that was the initial problem. I think they wouldn't have done anything if that's all she did. But from what it sounds like, she stopped the truck and began to harass the driver. And that's what ultimately, I think, led to the lawsuit. Yeah,
escalated a little bit. Yeah. But,
it sounds like she received a lot of international attention over this issue.
Yeah, certainly did. And
so
also,
she brought it away from the fact that she was harassing the truck driver and stopping him from what he was needing to do. And now it's come back. Now it's about that she gave the pig water, which is an issue.
Exactly. Well, because she could be, evidently, she could be facing up to 10 years in prison. And you don't get 10 years for harassing a driver. You get that for tainting. Because that's, when you think about it, that tainting food supply is something that you would do when you're going to, you know, siege a city or something
Chris,
like that.
Are they food?
Are pigs food? Or
that is the question.
I saw this movie once. And this pig could talk, and it was beautiful. His name was Babe. And
interestingly enough, that's at the heart of the question: is movies like Babe? And one of the things that what we do is we anthropomorphize, we give human characteristics to animals. And in fact, David Hume would say this is how he understood morality: is this idea of sympathy is the degree to which you could sympathize with
or
something.
Empathize.
Yeah. That you know, particularly the closer they are to you, the more morality you will give.
Right. So I've hardly seen people who empathize with cockroaches, but dogs.
No. Oh, man.
Very different story, right? So if somebody kills a cockroach, they don't get prosecuted or anything like that. But a cat or a dog, now there's animal cruelty thing involved, right?
Because, significantly, Michael Vick did 3 years for animal dog fighting.
Because the higher you go in this sort of hierarchy of...
this chain of being.
Being, yeah. And you see that it's getting closer and closer to humanness, if you will. Right? Yeah. There's something that humans have that other animals seem to have only in small degrees. Right? And the closer that they are to you, the more, like, it becomes more of an issue when you start hurting them.
Yeah. Right? It's interesting because this is intuitive. I think that we, for the longest time, there's been, especially if you look at even pagan or what have you, like different mythologies and stuff like that, there's always been this hierarchy of animals. And
there has. In fact, it goes beyond the Greeks. A lot of people thought, oh, this must come from Aristotle or Plato. Actually, no, it predates them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you think like C.S. Lewis, and it's been in North mythology. Lewis has picked up on this in a lot of his writings.
Mm-hmm. And Chronicles of Narnia.
Yeah, exactly. And it's fascinating how we don't need to be told as believers, because as believers, I think we believe that animals have a special place, right? Like there's a special place. And that when we think about the existence of souls, and things like that. J.P. Moreland has done excellent work in that, showing that animals would have basic souls. And I've heard him give talks about, like, it's on a gradient scale. Mm-hmm. And it's very interesting. But we can do it aside from the Christian worldview. People intuitively get this.
So then here's my question. Is the difference between human beings and animals just a matter of degree, or is it a matter of kind?
Well, that's the problem.
That's the question.
Ultimately, it's the worldview from which you're looking at yourself or the animal that's in play here,
right?
Because this is the inconsistency of naturalism. If naturalism is the lens that you're looking at a pig, it raises some serious questions. I mean, what is the difference between a pig and a human? I mean, you can even swap out a human heart for a pig heart, right? In fact, they do. So it raises this question then, I mean, well, what exactly is the difference, and should I be eating pigs?
Well, and that's, Steve, you brought this up earlier when we were talking, but the ethics of Peter Singer, he's an Australian philosopher. And
he's the top dog out there when it comes to ethics these days.
Oh, yeah. This guy's big time. And he would say that there's absolutely nothing between a human and a person. And in fact, a person who thinks that there is a difference is guilty of what he calls speciesism, and that we can't assume that we are somehow greater or have pride of place some ontologically other than animals, because he critiques the world from a naturalistic standpoint.
Right.
You know where this issue gets interesting to me is, you know, what happens is on this chain of being, you have animals that get closer and closer to humans, and what you find is basically animals in which you can anthropomorphize easier. Because ultimately what you're doing is you, in sympathy or empathy, you are viewing that animal as a person. And it's because of that that you are giving moral qualities to the animal. Because we understand when you leave the pig to themselves, though, and you don't give them those moral qualities, you know, everything starts to go awry. I mean, what do these animal activists do? For example, pigs are notorious for eating each other's tails, for killing each other. If a pig...
Eating their young.
Yeah, they do horrendous things. I mean, there's lots of different... If you've ever talked to a pig farmer, like if they get cut or anything, I mean, you got to separate them quickly, because the cannibalism is well known among pigs and the things that they'll do, right? And so now all of a sudden, it's like, okay, now are we going to hold these pigs accountable for killing this other pig? Well, of course not. You're not going to do that, because you know the pig doesn't have a moral understanding.
Pigs do what pigs do.
Yeah, pigs do what pigs do. But yet what we want to do is we want to give them these human characteristics, and then we want to hold ourselves morally accountable to the pig. You know, but yet we don't think that this pig has any moral accountability. Yeah. Really, it comes down to the fact that we think we have moral accountability,
right?
Yeah.
As persons,
it's interesting how we anthropomorphize, isn't it? Like when we watch movies, for example, I think it was Bug's Life or something like that. It was very interesting Because there is a scene, I think it was Bug's Life, there's a scene where the main characters, these bugs, are about to be eaten by a bird. Now, the way these main characters are portrayed are very human-like, right? They can talk That's to right. each other. They have emotions and things like that.
But what about the bird?
Yeah, but if you look at the bird, the way the bird is portrayed is very much like a bird.
That's
the
right.
bird doesn't talk. It doesn't even have that kind of human kind of human
The look
eyes.
In its eye, yeah.
That's right. Yeah,
it's they don't anthropomorphize the bird.
No, because in this scenario, the bird is supposed to be the bad guy, right? You That's don't right. want to humanize or anthropomorphize the bird. And so just yeah. the way they just keep your eyes out for that next time you go watch a movie where animals or bugs are being anthropomorphized, and then see how animals as animals, how they're portrayed.
Well, ultimately, we don't have too much more time to talk about this, mm-hmm. But the reality is that as persons, we understand that we have moral accountability. Mm-hmm. Now, the question is just going to be, where does that come from? And yeah. what you find is that this is not a question that naturalism can answer, because in fact, on naturalism, there is no such thing as moral accountability.
By the way, this Saturday, we're going to be doing our Thinking Series seminar and launch event, and one of the topics that we'll be speaking on is naturalism and ethics. So if you're interested, go to our website, register. It's yep. the event is free, open to the public.
I'm going to be speaking on man versus machine, so I'm going to be looking at this issue not from a pig's perspective, but from a machine's perspective. Mm-hmm. Should I water a thirsty machine?
Yeah.
Should I there plug it in? Yeah. Do I have any sort of duties to my computer?
Right. And I'll be specifically talking on naturalism and how we can't get morality from particles, but what is that? What are the implications of that?
I'll be talking, by the way, I'm not going to be talking specifically on that issue with KK. that was just me getting equivalent there. I'll be talking on artificial intelligence and intelligence augmentation. Yeah. I'll just be talking about what are some current issues going on mm-hmm. with this debate in technology that we need to be aware of.
Right, and it's all tied together.
About personhood.
And Chris, you'll be talking about
addiction and a sense of worth. And I'll be mm-hmm. tying that into the dehumanizing effects of addiction.
Right. All right. So make sure you go to our website and register for it. So let's move on to the last segment here then quickly.
Cool. Well, we wanted to start a three-week or three-part series on the Advent. We figured mm-hmm. 'tis the season and all that. So we're going to start off this week by talking about sort of the basis of Christmas or some of the myths surrounding the origins of Advent and the particularly the Christmas celebration season. So we think of things like winter solstice mm-hmm. and Christmas trees and the Yule log and mm-hmm. things like that we some of them we don't celebrate. We don't celebrate the winter solstice anymore. We just understand what it is. Mm-hmm. But we do have things like Christmas trees. And so some people, for instance, there is one gentleman, and he writes, sorry, my little thing's in front of me. When you put up a tree, tack a wreath on the door, and maybe hang mistletoe from the lintel. I don't even know what that is.
Mantle,
no, yeah.
I don't know that you'd hang it there either. Yeah. Anyway.
Lintel, what are you signifying? And he quotes this guy, evergreen trees were important fertility emblems for pre-Christian ceremonies marking the winter solstice. People from ancient societies believed that by decorating their homes and temples with evergreen plants, such as holly, ivy, mistletoe, they're helping to carry the diminished sun through a critical period. And then he goes on talking about mistletoe was the most sacred plant of the Druids. It was given great reverence, so on and so forth. And then he finishes by saying, while all the greenery in a home decked out for Christmas is beautiful to look at, these customs have nothing at all to do with Christ. In fact, they're sheer paganism, directly descended from ancient rites practiced long before Jesus' birth. Do you really want to give the impression that you're worshiping a tree or that you desire fruitful union because you give someone a kiss under the mistletoe? So this is a view that some Christians hold, and certainly Christians get attacked. There's mm-hmm. you would not believe how many websites are out there attacking Christianity based on this premise. So mm-hmm. is it true?
Well, yeah, it's true.
But case closed.
Yeah. Well, it is pagan. There's no doubt about that.
No, that there's lots of things that are. And it's actually, this is the interesting part about it, is that when we think about it, when we think of the backgrounds, most of it does, or there are ties to paganism. Like,
well, here's the real question, though, isn't it?
What's that?
Steve, Chris, do you have a Christmas tree in your house?
I sure do.
I don't yet. I've kind of dropped the ball. I'll have it. I'm going to get one either today or tomorrow. I know. I've been lazy.
We're giving Chris a dirty look.
I know.
The stink eye.
The stink eye.
I have a Christmas tree in my house with decorations, lights, and a big star on top. Mm-hmm. Smelling quite nice. It is a live. I use in quotes live. Yeah. Tree.
Yeah, kind of alive.
Dying. Yeah, we went Christmas tree hunting this year, and brought my tree home.
Nice.
So I participate, as do you guys.
So is that wrong?
Yeah.
Well, a little background. So when you think about things like winter solstice, so we'll just talk about the date real quick first, December 25th, and this is winter solstice. And for those of you who don't know, that's the celebration or the time of year marked by the shortest day of the year.
Right.
So you'll have pagans in, say, Europe, and during that, while the days are getting shorter and shorter, it's obviously getting colder and colder. Mm-hmm. Crops aren't growing. Things are, there isn't as much light. It's like the sun is going away in some of their mindsets. They figured out that this is the shortest day of the year. So they want to celebrate. So they would have a winter celebration for winter solstice during this time. This was true also in the Roman Empire. In Rome and stuff like that, they had centered around the Roman god Saturn, mm-hmm. was the god of the harvest. The way the whole legend went is that Jupiter, which was like the main god, would kick.
Zeus,
isn't that Zeus? Isn't Zeus Greek?
Well, Jupiter is the Greek name for Zeus. Zeus is the Roman name. Yeah.
Oh, so
are you talking Latin and Greek?
Sorry, Jupiter is Greek. Zeus is Roman.
Are you sure?
I'm pretty sure.
I thought it was the other way around.
But actually, you're right. It's the other way around.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Apologies.
No, it's all good. It's all good because, Zeus is Mount Olympus, right?
Right.
Yeah, in Greece. So at any rate, Jupiter would kick Saturn out for whatever, and then he would go, and then that's why they would go down. And in the temple for Saturn, they would symbolically shackle his or chain up his feet, and then at winter solstice, the chains would be broken, and he would be on his way back in. Sort of thing. So they would do all these things, and there would just be this great. It was called Saturnalia. Was the celebration, and it would go on for a week, and it would just be this gay old time, right? Mm-hmm. The traditional meaning of the word,
right.
Yeah. But at any rate, so by the time of Christ, this is already in full swing, right? It had been happening for quite some time. And then it wasn't until about the 4th century that the church, because this had been going on for hundreds of years, the church decided that they were going to incorporate it. And there was this nativity of Christ.
Well, it's perfect that Jesus' birth falls on the same.
Isn't that an awesome coincidence? It's like, what are the chances of that? And they're like, you can just picture them sitting around. Maybe should we do something about like?
We'll deal with that whole issue sometime. The whole thing with was Jesus born on December 25th?
Yeah,
no.
But
let's just solve that one for you.
Safe to say though, it doesn't matter, right?
Because it
ends up being about. What is the point of Christmas celebration? Because people say, it has pagan origins, therefore it can't be celebrated, right? And this is going to actually be the same thing with this, with the Christmas tree, with the Yule log, with all of that. But I ask you guys, what do you call the fifth day of the week?
Friday?
No, okay, the other fifth day.
The other fifth day. Thursday?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you know the historical antecedents of that?
Thor, isn't it? Thor's Day.
Thor's Day, exactly. Yeah. So would you say that when you call Thursday Thursday, you're thinking in your mind, I'm celebrating Thor. This is Thor's Day.
Right.
And I'm going to, do you know what I'm saying?
Saturday.
Yeah.
And then Friday, I think, is what, Freya, I think?
I can't remember.
Norse goddess, I think.
Anyway, yeah, it's all based on, it's most of it's Norse, right? Mm-hmm. That's where we get these from. But we don't accuse people of mm-hmm. worshiping Thor on Thursday or the sun on Sunday or
right.
whatever, right? Like, that's just not the way it is. So we have all of these historical antecedents, but it doesn't mean that that's what they are now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Not to mention that the church has been in the business of redeeming culture.
Right? Absolutely.
Taking what is pagan and giving it new meaning.
Yeah.
Same thing with, say,
we're good at the
Celtic crosses and things like that.
Right? Oh, yeah.
It was a symbol that was pagan in origin, but the church has adopted it and gave it a new meaning. The whole idea of restoration or recreation, going with that theology.
Mm-hmm. It's and there's some really, really incredible examples from missionaries. One thinks of Don Richardson. Are you guys mm-hmm. familiar with him, with the Peace Child?
Yeah, yeah. I know the name for sure, yeah.
And essentially the story goes that he goes into and is introduced to this tribe. And there is, just to make a long story short, they have this really incredible understanding or not good understanding of how people should interact with each other. When they're told the Jesus story, mm-hmm. they cheer for Judas because right. they think that that's
the smart
play.
Yeah.
Right. And so he's like, man, I don't know how I'm going to preach the gospel to these guys. And what he ends up doing is he finds out they have the tradition of what's called the Peace Child, mm-hmm. where whenever two tribes are making peace, they offer one of their children to the other one, not as a sacrifice, but as a symbol, and for that child to be raised in the other community, and that child would be an offering of peace. And so he was able to tell them about Jesus, the ultimate peace child, that God gave his son and handed him over, more or less, to humanity, who was at enmity with him, and so on and so forth. And this was able to give this tribe an incredible understanding of what it was. So he took something that was, you know, quote unquote pagan, it wasn't Christian in origin, and he redeemed it and used it to show the gospel. And that's exactly what you were alluding to there. Hey, Steve.
Yeah, yeah. I think we're coming to a close here, but before we wrap up here, I just wanted to address a question from last week's podcast that we didn't really, went past it a little bit without really engaging with it, it felt like. So the question was...
Yeah, we felt bad about that. That was not purposeful.
So we just wanted to make sure that you, as the listeners, understood that we're not avoiding the question. So here's the question from last week. If God commanded you to go out there and kill somebody, would you do it? Right. So how would you guys answer that question?
Yeah, often this is a question posed by an atheist or somebody that's a non-Christian, particularly if they're challenging divine command theory, but more or less if they're just challenging a Christian in general, because you'll have these moments in the Old Testament where God commands people like Abraham mm-hmm. to kill his son. Mm-hmm. So what do you do? First off, I would say that question is just as poignant to the person asking it as is to me. I could ask an atheist the same question. Well, if God told you to go kill somebody, what would you do? Right? And they may say, well, I wouldn't do it. Mm-hmm. To which, by the way, that would be my response as well. Right. I wouldn't do it. But but they would ask, and I would be asking as well, well, what's the background knowledge? Mm-hmm. Right? Well, what's the background on what's taking place? Because that's what they're going to do, because they're going to come to the conclusion that God doesn't exist. And that's why they're not going to go through with what's been commanded. But what happens if they come to the conclusion that God does exist?
Right.
Right. Now, then what would they do with the command? Now, that's where I'm at, right? Because I think God does exist. And if God, and if, say, I were to hear this command, now I've got to put this into a further background knowledge that I have. Now, as I think through this question, what I come to is I have to look at this question in light of Scripture. Mm-hmm. And in light of history and where I am historically and the fact that Christianity has been fulfilled, that that there would be no precedent for God to be asking me to do something like that. I mean, even when God asks Abraham to sacrifice his son, he stops him. This was all a part of a story. This was a part of God's redemptive plan in history, that ultimately he would be sending his son
Foreshadowing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Foreshadowing what was to come. Now, given, but we could ask the question then, given Abraham's background knowledge, though, of what God was asking him, That to me seems like a different question because of where he was historically.
Actually, we an atheist and I had a conversation on that exact issue, Abraham being commanded to sacrifice Isaac. And the atheist basically said, if God were to tell me this, I would just basically tell him to screw off. Right? There's no way I would do such an immoral thing, and you can't ask me to do something that's so immoral. But what's funny is that I actually had I have a really close friend, Dan. I remember coming up to him, and I asked him for his keys to the car because I was going to load some stuff in the trunk for him. But he didn't know that. I just went up to him and asked for his keys. What did he do? He just handed it over to me. No questions asked. Why? Why is that? Because, well, we're really close friends. He knows me. I know him. So when I ask him to give me something, he trusts me and he gives it to me. When I look at this atheist and his response, I'm like, of course you would say that because you don't know God the way Abraham did.
Your background knowledge is
exactly
critical to this question, because you could ask the hypothetical question, could there be a situation in which God could reveal himself to you in such a way that you would find yourself in Abraham's situation? I think the atheist would have to say, yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think that they, you know, given the right background knowledge, I think that they could be presented with the similar situation that Abraham was presented with.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Ultimately, I think you're right, though, Steve. This comes down to trust. Mm-hmm. Abraham had a relationship with God in which he trusted him and realized that God clearly is doing something here and was waiting on the Lord in that situation.
In fact, often commentators will point to that passage just before he goes up to the mountain. Abraham tells his servants, okay, you guys wait here. We will go up to worship, Isaac and I, we will go to up to the mountain to worship, and we will come back. And what the commentators are saying, even here, Abraham is demonstrating his trust in God, that God is the giver of life. He can take it away, but he can somehow bring Isaac back to life if he wanted to, right? So he trusted that even probably maybe even after he sacrificed him, maybe he thought, even after I sacrifice him, maybe God will bring him back, because that's the kind of God that I know, right? And so... commentators will often point that out.
Cool. Yeah, it's those are tough questions that people ask. I mean, it's a fair question to ask, I think, because of what people read in the Old Testament. But I think that people need to appreciate the progression of history. No problem. The progression of history and where we are in light of what God was doing. That this would make sense in light of what God was doing and where we are in history. If God were to command that now, that wouldn't make any sense in light of history and what God was doing. So I would clearly see that I was not hearing God correctly.
Okay, well, that's a good note to end on. Thank you for joining us, listeners. The Apologetics Canada podcast has been a ministry of Apologetics Canada, and we'll see you next week with more.